ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
भगवद गीता एज इट इज ट्रांसलेशन एंड कमेंट्री बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस A.C. भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद Chapter 13, text 18. Jyotisham api tat jyotihi
tamasaha
param
uchate
jnanam
jnayam
jnanagamyam hridi
sarvasya
vishthitam. Jyotisham api taj jyotis
tamasah
paramuchyate
jnanam
jnayam jnanagamyam
hridi
sarvasya vishthitam. Jyotisham api taj jyotis
tamasah paramuchyate
jnanam jnayam jnanagamyam hridi sarvasya vishthitam. Jyotisham api taj jyotis
tamasah
paramuchyate
jnanam
jnayam jnanagamyam hridi sarvasya vishthitam. He is the source of light in all luminous objects. This is referring to the Paramatma. He is the source of light in all luminous objects. He is beyond the darkness of matter and is unmanifested. He is knowledge. He is the object of knowledge. And he is the goal of knowledge. He is situated in everyone's heart. Purport. The Supersoul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the source of light in all luminous objects, like the sun, moon, and stars. In the Vedic literature, we find that in the spiritual kingdom there is no need of sun or moon, because the effulgence of the Supreme Lord is there. In the material world, that Brahma Jyoti, the Lord's spiritual effulgence, is covered by the Mahatattva, the material elements. Therefore, in this material world, we require the assistance of sun, moon, electricity, etc. for light. But in the spiritual world, there is no need of such things. It is clearly stated in the Vedic literature that because of his luminous effulgence, everything is illuminated. It is clear, therefore, that his situation is not in the material world. He is situated in the spiritual world, which is far, far away in the spiritual sky. That is also confirmed in the Vedic literature. Aditya Varnam Tamasah Parastat, Shvetashvatara Upanishad 3.8. He is just like the sun, eternally luminous, but he is far, far beyond the darkness of this material world. His knowledge is transcendental. The Vedic literature confirms that Brahman is concentrated transcendental knowledge. To one who is anxious to be transferred to that spiritual world, knowledge is given by the Supreme Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart. One Vedic mantra, Shvetashvatara Upanishad 6.18, says, Tang hadevam atma buddhi prakasham mumukshur vai sharanam aham prapadye. One must surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead if he at all wants liberation. As far as the goal of ultimate knowledge is concerned, it is also confirmed in Vedic literature. Tameva viditvati mrityumeti. Only by knowing him can one surpass the boundary of birth and death. Shvetashvatara Upanishad 3.8. He is situated in everyone's heart as the Supreme Controller. The Supreme has hands and legs distributed everywhere, and this cannot be said of the individual soul. Therefore, that there are two knowers of the field of activity, the individual soul and the supersoul, must be admitted. One's hands and legs are distributed locally, but Krishna's hands and legs are distributed everywhere. This is confirmed in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad 3.17. Sarvasya Prabhum Ishanam Sarvasya Sharanam Brihat. That Supreme Personality of Godhead, Supersoul, is the Prabhu, or Master of all living entities. Therefore, He is the ultimate shelter of all living entities. So there's no denying the fact that the Supreme Supersoul and the individual soul are always different. If you have not yet done so, please remove your cell phone from your pocket or your bag or wherever it is and put it off. Please, everyone, put your phone off. Thank you. Yeah. Supposed to take the Guru's instructions to go back to Godhead. There's so many things to follow, and you can't even follow a small request to switch off the cell phone. Hare Krishna. I'm speaking on this shloka today because in my series of Vishnu Sahasranama speeches, I've come to name 499 in the recension that I'm following, which is the name Gyanagamya, which also appears here in the Bhagavad Gita. And as usual, when we start figuratively digging into the meaning of these names, we'll find there's more than we expected. Much more than we expected. This is a description of the Supersoul within everyone's heart, and also it's particularly of this form of the Lord. It's described about Him, Gyanam Gyayam Gyanagamyam, that He is knowledge, that which is to be known, the knowable. Srila Prabhupada translates that as the knowable. I don't know if that's generally used as an adjective in English. As a noun in English. It's a concept which is very important in Vedic philosophy, but it's not. I don't know. I haven't studied Western philosophy. I don't even know if it's a category. The difference between knowledge and the knowable. What is knowable? Gyayam means that which is knowable and that which is the proper subject of knowledge, or that which should be known. We find elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita, there are many such statements similar to this, that Yomam eva samudho janati purushottamam sasarva vid bhajate mam sarva sarva bhavena bharata. Krishna says that one who knows me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead without doubting knows everything. Of this there is no doubt. He knows everything in all ways. So he may say, well, okay, how many hairs on the head of William Pitt the Elder when he was 21 years old? William Pitt the Elder was a Prime Minister of England. So we're told. I didn't see him personally. At least I don't remember seeing him. He said, you don't know. Well, that shows you're not fully self-realized. You don't know that. But that is not gyayam. That is not worth knowing. It's not worth knowing for anyone, sarva bhavena, in all respects. It's not worth knowing for anyone, even William Pitt the Elder, at any point in time, in any circumstance. It's not useful information. It's not meaningful information. Gyam, now I'm talking about this, but I actually have to come to Gyanagamyam. That is synonymous with Vedyam. Just as the words Gyan and Vidya are pretty much synonymous. So in Bhagavad Gita, elsewhere again, we find Vedaisya Sarver Aham Eva Vedyaha. In all the Vedas, I am that which is to be known. We can learn so many things from the Vedas about material subjects also, and spiritual subjects. But the point of it all is to know Krishna. So he is knowledge, the object of knowledge, and is to be understood by knowledge. So they're all him. So according to logic, basic mathematical logic, that things which are equal to each other, two things which are equal to a third object, they're equal to each other. In other words, if A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. So if Gyanam, Gyayam and Gyanagamyam are all the same, they're all Krishna, so they must be all the same. No. That doesn't work according to transcendental mathematics. In one sense they're the same, but they're not all exactly the same. This is what the impersonalists will say. When one becomes self-realized, then they understand knowledge, the knower, and the knower, the process of knowing, they all become one. The seer, the seen, the act of seeing, they all become one, which is actually impossible, because the act of seeing and that which is seen, they, for these two terms to be even conceivable, they must have be separate phenomena. So to say they all become one, it's not conceivable. And it's also not inconceivable in the sense that we use the term achintya for Krishna. That doesn't mean absurdity. That's a very important point, that when we say achintya, that's beyond the power of our thinking. That doesn't mean that it's absurd. There are no horse's eggs in the spiritual world, or rabbit's horns. That's conceivable, actually, but it doesn't exist. So there's a difference between being inconceivable and not existing at all. So everything is Krishna, but is also not Krishna. Everything is Krishna in as much as everything is connected with Krishna. He is knowledge, because there's nothing which is separate from Krishna. So everything that is known is, indirectly at least, Krishna. He is the proper object of knowledge. And he can be known by knowledge. Gyanagamyam, Srila Prabhupada has translated this, to be approached by knowledge. So that's to be approached is exactly the term, again, gamya, I mean, which gives the sense of going. So Gyanagamyam gives the idea that one should go by knowledge to Krishna. So all knowledge is meant to lead to Krishna. And if you don't reach the goal of Krishna, then all the knowledge is incomplete at best. In other words, not really knowledge. You can say it's knowledge. Does someone who knows that 2 plus 2 equals 4 know mathematics? Yes, you can say. You know mathematics, they know something very small about mathematics, but you wouldn't really call him a mathematician because he knows that 2 plus 2 equals 4. If he doesn't know anything else, he's not a mathematician. But you can't say he doesn't know anything about mathematics. He knows something. So jnana gamya, by knowledge one should go to him. Now this name might seem to be against what we learn about Krishna, because bhaktya mama vijanati, Krishna can be approached by bhakti, not by jnana in and of itself, or by karma. These are the three principal paths traced out in Bhagavad Gita, or four paths. Karma, jnana, yoga is often tied with jnana. So three or four paths, and the fourth path, bhakti. But Krishna says, I can be known fully, properly, by bhakti, not by jnana. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in discussing what is the goal of life and how to attain it, he rejected so many propositions, but he accepted jnane prayasamudapasyana manta eva. The first thing, if we're to actually approach Krishna, is to give up the attempt to know him by knowledge. Whoops. But he's called jnana gamya, to be approached by knowledge. So, where do we go from here? You get caught in a logical tizzy, and it's the computer goes, the logical system goes round and round and round, and the computer hangs. Therefore, we bring in achintya. Then that's the reboot, achintya. And they say, it's just cheating. It's just like, you don't understand, you can't explain it, so you just say achintya. That's all. There are many such statements in Shastra. Nayamatna pravachanena labhyo na medhya na bahuna shrutena. This atma, which can be understood to be the individual atma or the paramatma, the Supreme Lord, cannot be understood by pravachan, talking about it. Not by one's intelligence, namedhya na, nor by very much learning. Tamayivarsha, rinuti, tena labhyas. If he reveals himself, then he can be understood. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, also, athapite deva padambuja dvayam prasadale shanu grihita evahi. Janati tatvam bhagavans mahim no nachanya ekopi chirang vichinvan. If who says this verse? Is this Brahma to Krishna, or is it the demigods? There, those two sets of prayers, there are many similarities. The demigods to Krishna in the womb, and Brahma's prayers. So it's one of the, I believe it's from Brahma's prayers to Krishna after Brahma had stolen Krishna's cowherd boys, friends, and calves. So he says, your lotus feet, atapite, O God, he refers to him as God, O atapite, oh, therefore you, God, your two lotus feet. If one gets a little, or if one is able to accept a little trace of mercy from you, then he can understand all the complex subjects concerning you. But otherwise, by one's own mental efforts, it's not possible even after a very, very long time. So how is it that he's to be known by knowledge, or approached by knowledge? Well, looking at it from another perspective, if he's not knowable, or is not to be understood by knowledge, then what is he? There's nothing to be known. There should be something to be known about him. Bhakti means to love Krishna. So if you love someone but you don't know anything about them, is it possible? Why is Krishna all attractive? Because he is Ananta Kalyana Guna. He has unlimited auspicious qualities, unlimited in number and unlimited in scope and depth. Therefore, Krishna is all attractive. One of his qualities is that he cannot be known. There are many such names here in Vishnu Sahasranam. We just had the names Gupta, which is similar to Guha, which is another name in Vishnu Sahasranam, which means hidden. Another name in Vishnu Sahasranam is Achintya. Can't conceive of him. Durdhara, which again it has a similar meaning to, cannot be very difficult to hold in the mind. In other words, very difficult to understand or non-understand. So there are names like that. But then on the other hand, the whole Vishnu Sahasranam, and what to speak of the Srimad Bhagavatam, is just describing the qualities of Krishna. And devotees are supposed to, primary part of devotional service is to study and hear and shravan, manan, nididhyasana, to study, to hear about, to contemplate and to enter deeply into the experience of those transcendental qualities of Krishna. If he's not knowable in the absolute sense, then it's like saying that it's like rabbit's horns or horse's eggs or castles in the sky. They don't exist. They won't exist. There's nothing to be known about them. Write an essay describing rabbit's horns. What are you going to say? There's nothing to say because they don't exist. So to say that Krishna is totally unknowable, as the impersonalists say, it's actually very offensive because they want to cancel his personality. If there's nothing to be... Just here, just in this section of this Bhagavad Gita, Sarvata Parnipad, yeah, here it is. Sarvata Parnipadam Tat Sarvatokshi Shiromukham Sarvata Shutimalloke Sarvam Avritya Tishtati. They say he has, the impersonalists say he has no hands and legs. He has no eyes or heads or faces or ears. In other words, he's insensate. But Krishna himself says, everywhere are his hands and legs, his eyes, heads and faces, and he has ears everywhere. In this way the super soul exists, pervading everything. So they say, you can't, and God is no form. If you say he has form, means he's on the same level as us. But if you say he doesn't have form, that means that we are more than him, because we have form. He's supposed to be the supreme. And we've got something that he doesn't have that makes us more than him. So this impersonal idea, it completely kills bhakti. Is it just the supreme, oh, so sacred? You can't think, can't know, just you can feel in your heart something like this. But this, it kills bhakti. If there's nothing to know about him, then he is not a person. If personality means there are certain distinguishing features, everyone has distinguishing features. Everyone has a particular body with certain features, which are different from others. And the mentality is different from others. The activities are different from others. So if we say, well, God is too sacred to be a person. But what does it mean, too sacred to be a person? Yeah. Then he's depersonalized. And then there's no question of sacred or not sacred. It's just like, how sacred are rabbit's horns? They're not sacred and they're not sacred. If you want to be a Buddhist, you could say they're neither sacred nor not sacred, nor in between. It's just, and then you get another absurdity. So he is knowable. He is to be understood. But it's not the knowledge, it's not by mundane knowledge, it's a different approach altogether. How is knowledge received? Well, through the Gyanindriyas, they're called the Gyanindriyas, by the eyes we see, by the nose we smell, by the ears we hear, by the skin we feel touch sensation, by the tongue we taste. But Krishna cannot be perceived through the mundane eyes, ears, nose, tongue, or skin. So in that sense, when Shastra says he's unknowable, he cannot be experienced by the mundane senses. That's why materialistic people, they can't see Krishna. Krishna was present in this world. Duryodhana saw him, but he didn't. Duryodhana saw him, but he didn't recognize him as the Supreme Lord. Show me God, people say. Well, Duryodhana saw God so many times, but he didn't see him. What did he see? He saw a member of the Yadu dynasty, maybe. He's claiming to be a member of the Yadu dynasty, but from what we know, he's just some cowherd boy who jumped himself up and claims to be some prince. He's my enemy, and I'm going to kill him. That's all. He's a friend of the Pandavas, means friend of my enemy is my enemy. So he's my enemy. Krishna, very dangerous person. That's how Duryodhana saw him. So did he see God? Well, you could say in one sense yes, in another sense not at all. People ask us, have you seen God? And they say, yeah, you see him everywhere. How can you not see him? He's everywhere, then you should see him everywhere. He's in the sky, in the land, the water, the taste, rasoham apsu kaunteya. In every sensation we experience Krishna, if one has the sense to do so. Sense here in the sense of intelligence and sense in the sense of faculty. So Krishna cannot be understood by knowledge. Now knowledge, of course, is not only what we see, touch, taste, smell, feel and hear. But building on that, there's also abstract knowledge, just like mathematics. 2 + 2 = 4. It's abstract knowledge. It's you can't touch it, taste it, smell it, feel it, or hear. It's in the mind. And similarly, knowledge of speculative philosophy, logic, it's all in the mind. And logic, by logic and ethical speculation, we can discuss such questions as, should you kill a child in the womb if you get prior knowledge it's going to be a demon? What would you do if you were there when Hitler was born and you knew that if he lives, he'll become such a dangerous person? What should you do? From the version of the Mahabharata, we would get the idea you should have killed him, because that's what Vidura advised Dhritarashtra. He's so happy. Oh, I got 100 sons. Well, first of all, there was just one. And Vidura came and said, oh, you got a son, kill him. Better you kill him. He'll cause the destruction of your whole family. But probably not many philosophers, especially in the present age, would agree with that. So this abstract knowledge is not as concrete as... Concrete here means nirdishta, something like that. Not as fixed as we presume knowledge received through our senses to be. So Krishna is to be seen, touched, smelt, tasted, felt, appreciated within the mind, but not through mundane senses. Atah Shri Krishna namadi nabhaved grahyam indriyai sivon mukhe hi jivado swayam eva spuratiyata. Krishna is to be known. Krishna is to be seen, touched, smelt, heard, but through purified senses. He reveals himself to one who is eager to serve him. Otherwise, nachanya ekopi chirang vichinvan. Otherwise, one cannot understand him, even in many, many millions of lives, for a very, very long time. So Krishna is to be understood, and one can go to him by knowing him. This is jnanagamya, means you can go to him, or you should go to him. Knowledge is what should carry us to him. As Krishna states elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, janma karma cha me divyam evang yo veti tatvataha tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mam eti sojuna. Krishna says that anyone who knows properly, fully, that my appearance in this world and my activities are fully spiritual, such a person, upon leaving this body, goes to me, doesn't come back again to this world. So Krishna is to be known. Can be known. How is that? By hearing about him. This same word. Jnane prayasamudapasya namanta eva jivanti sanmukharitam bhavadiyavartam. This is the recommendation. This is from Brahma's prayers. Giving up the endeavor to know by one's own puffed up mental prowess. One should simply become humble and hear topics about Krishna. One should spend one's life hearing about Krishna. And what should the attitude be in that? Jivanti samagarajavadiyava sthane stita shudhigatang tanuvang manobhya ye prayasho jitadiptopi apitaistri lokyam. One doesn't have to wander here and there or make radical changes in one's existence. Whatever situation one is in, one can be in that situation, but go on hearing, dedicating one's life. Hearing means hearing about Krishna from devotees, and dedicating one's life, mind, body, words, fully in the service of Krishna. And by this, one can, by this, Ye praya samja. One can almost conquer God, who is otherwise unconquerable, in all the three worlds. So Krishna is to be known. One should go to him by knowledge. Now, knowledge is a subsidiary to bhakti. Vasudeve bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojataha. Janyatyashu vairagyam jnanam cha yadahaitukam. By devotional service to Vasudev, Krishna, by bhakti yoga, then vairagya, detachment, and knowledge, they arise very quickly. Janyati ashu. Ashu means very quickly. Janyati, they come into being. They come into being by themselves, ahaitukam. There's no other cause. So knowledge comes from bhakti, and it is by that knowledge that Krishna is to be understood. So when we say that Krishna cannot be understood by knowledge, we may say that what is the meaning of the name Jnanagamya? One has to go to him by knowledge, but that means not any mundane knowledge, but it's the knowledge which is a subsidiary of bhakti. Not exactly, it's non-different from bhakti, but it's one aspect of bhakti. Hearing about Krishna, most important. Learning about Krishna. And by that hearing about Krishna, then bhakti will arise. Such knowledge is a subsidiary of bhakti, and by such knowledge bhakti will arise. As is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Yasyang Vaishu Yamananam Krishna Paramapurushe Bhaktirutpadyate Pungsa Shokamoha Bhayavahaha. There are many such verses, I'm just quoting one of them, that by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, then devotional feelings, devotional service, bhakti to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, arises, comes into being, and dispels all lamentation, illusion, and fear. So bhakti, by bhakti Krishna is to be known. Bhakti is inseparable from hearing about Krishna, learning about Krishna. And by that learning, one will come to Krishna. Bhakti will arise. So it's a chicken and the egg kind of question, which comes first. But actually they're non-different also, because if we hear about Krishna, that is the beginning of our bhakti. To hear with some faith from devotees, that is the beginning of devotion. Oh yeah, so knowledge. Now what is that knowledge by which he is to be known? That's just been stated just prior to this here in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna, of course the whole Bhagavad Gita is about knowledge, but in this particular chapter Krishna states in verse number 3, or verse number 2, sometimes different numbering. Krishna states, Kshetragyam chapi maang vidhi sarva kshetreshu bharata kshetra kshetragya yo jnanam yach taj jnanam matang mama. O Sayana Bharat, you should understand that I am also the knower in all bodies, and to understand this body and its knower is called knowledge. So this is knowledge, Krishna says. This knowledge of the field and the knower of the field, or the body and the owner of the body, that is knowledge. And Krishna expands on this a few verses later when he says, in 5 verses, he explains what is knowledge. Amanitvam Humility. Knowledge begins with humility. There's no question of having knowledge if one is not humble. One has, without humility, one cannot learn anything. Adambhitvam. So these are humility, pridelessness. These two words are very similar. Amanitvam means to be without a sense of self-importance. Adambhitvam, dambha, that refers to, it's very similar, but it refers to the sense of pride in which one is arrogant, contemptuous towards others. These are all the components of knowledge. Amanitvam, adambhitvam, ahimsa. Interestingly, Krishna speaks of ahimsa in the middle of inciting Arjuna to fight. I won't discuss that right now. That's another whole discussion. Kshantihi, tolerance. Arjavam, simplicity, straightforwardness. These are all qualities, especially of Brahmanas and transcendentalists, not so much of the Kshatriyas who have to fight. Acharya Upasanam, Acharya Upasanam. Srila Prabhupada translates this here, approaching a bona fide spiritual master. Upasana means worship. So one cannot get knowledge without worshipping a guru. And worship means not just some formal ceremony, but it's whole life of dedication, life after life. Shocham, cleanliness, Staryam, steadfastness. Atma vinigraha, self-control. All these terms are very important. I'm not going to get into them just now. Indriyarteshu vairagyam. In the matter of the senses, renunciation. So one should give up the sense of trying to... Yeah, one should give up sense gratification, let's just put it simply. Anahankara, being without false egoism. Evacha, certainly, also. Janma mrityu jaravyadhi dukha doshanu darshanam. One should observe the miseries of birth, death, old age and disease. One should be aware of this. Asaktir anabhishvanga putra dara grihadishu. Freedom. Freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home and the rest. Nityangcha samachittatvam. Even-mindedness. Amid pleasant and unpleasant events. Ishtanishtopapattishu. Ishtanishtopapattishu. That's all. Nityangcha samachittatvam ishtanishtopapattishu. Maichanyena yogena bhaktiravyabhicharini. Constant and unalloyed devotion to me, Krishna says. Vivikta desha sevitvam, aspiring to live in a solitary place. Aratir jana sangsadi, detachment from the general mass of people. Adhyatma jnana nityatvam, accepting the importance of self-realization. Tattva jnanartha darshanam, and philosophical search for the absolute truth. Etat jnanam iti proktam ajnanam yadatonyata. All these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. As Srila Prabhupada points out in the purport to these five verses, the central principle of all of these elements of knowledge are maichanyena yogena bhaktiravyabhicharini, constant and unalloyed devotion to me. So when Krishna says, I am to be jnana gamya, he is to be understood by knowledge, that knowledge means that the focal point is devotion to him. Without that, all knowledge is meaningless. So one's real knowledge begins when one accepts that I have to understand Krishna. That's the basis of all knowledge. Just like arithmetic is the basis of all mathematics. So 2 plus 2 equals 4. Well, if you know that, it's not that you're a mathematician, but if you don't know that, you can't be a mathematician. So in the beginning, one should accept, I am an eternal servant of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that doesn't mean you know everything. It doesn't mean you're an advanced devotee. But you can't be an advanced devotee without knowing this, without accepting this. So in the beginning, at least, one has to accept this principle. Otherwise, one can superficially learn about bhakti, and you might even be able to pass your bhakti shastri course and get a certificate. But the real certificate that we want to get from Krishna is not what great achievements we've performed, or how much we know, or how rich we are, or how poor we are, how renounced we are. Someone may try, I want to be rich, I'm working hard, and then I can't do it. So he goes the other way, and then he becomes a complete renouncer, one way or the other. If I can't have it all, then I won't have anything. One way or other, I have to show how great I am. So it's not possible to understand Krishna by any of these means, and nor even if all these things may be seen in bhakti, but it may not be bhakti, which is ultimately a question of attitude. So Krishna might not reveal himself to a devotee, even who knows every shloka in the Srimad Bhagavatam and can explain it very nicely, or is very active and building big temples and making thousands of disciples or whatever. Now, we're not saying that these activities are in and of themselves antithetical to devotional service, but they do not in and of themselves compromise the essence of devotional service, which is if Krishna is pleased to accept our humbly performed service. The service itself might be very great. Jumping over to Lanka. Hanuman jumped over to Lanka. Is that why Ram loves him? Because he jumped over to Lanka? Well, yeah, maybe, but the squirrel is appreciated as much. He didn't perform such wonderful activities. Nor has he the capacity to do so, but is accepted. If one has the capacity to jump to Lanka in the service of Lord Ram, one should do so. But the teachings of Krishna consciousness, they're open. The path of Krishna consciousness is open to everyone. So Krishna is jnana-gamya. We should know Krishna. We have to know something. We can't not know anything. The attempt in yoga meditation, yoga citta-vritti-nirodha, means to... Yoga means, too, that the fluctuations of the mind should be stopped. Close it down. Oh, my mind, so much disturbance in my mind. Okay, close it down, become a vegetable. Well, the idea in yoga is not exactly to become a vegetable. Of course, vegetables also do have some consciousness, but that's an English... a saying in English, to become like a vegetable, to have no... But the idea is that in yoga one becomes... Well, it's not even... You become blissful by not having... Then atmanyev atmana tushta. One becomes fully... The self becomes fully satisfied in the self. But devotees don't find that very relishable. Just... You're there and you're just with yourself, that's all. And taking delight in yourself. And there's no attribute, it's just consciousness. Pure consciousness. Pure consciousness in the sense there's nothing else but consciousness. But there's not that there's something to be conscious of. Because if you're conscious of something, that means you're separate, you're looking at something. So in that sense, the seer and the seen become merged and there's just consciousness. Keval Chaitanya only. There may be something like that, that yogis, they have time, but devotees are not in the slightest bit interested in that. Devotees want to see Krishna, and touch Krishna, and taste Krishna, embrace Krishna, smell Krishna, serve Krishna. That's the most important thing. So Krishna is to be known, don't make him too much unknown. There are the personal and impersonal aspects of the Lord, that is accepted. But we stress very much on the personal aspect. He is to be known by the process of devotional service. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchyate. Engaging our senses in the service of the Master of the Senses. That means not only the senses but all the senses, karmendriya, gyanendriya. All the senses are engaged in his service. Hare Krishna. Any comment or question about this, please? Actually, I didn't look at my notes. I should look at my notes. This ties up also. The one name just before this was Gopati, the name just before this. And that, Gopati, two names before this. Gopati means master of words. So that means he's the Lord of the Vedas. So the Vedas would be meaningless unless they described him. Unless there's something to describe, then what is the meaning of all the words in the Vedas? Of course, the Mimamsakas, or as we call them, the Purva Mimamsakas, they say, "No, the words of the Vedas, you don't have to understand them. You recite them, and you get the result. Just like you drive a car, you don't have to understand how it works. You just drive it, that's all. So you chant the Vedic mantras, and you get the result. You go to heaven, or what? You don't need to understand the words." And they decry those who emphasize the Upanishads and say, "No, it's all about gyan, you see, the knowledge, you have to know the knowledge." They say, "I don't have to know anything, you just recite and you get the result." So, Krishna is the master of the words of the Vedas, and there would be no meaning to the Vedas unless they had something to describe. There is knowledge there. If you say words without knowledge, it's a strange idea. The words that don't really convey anything. There are such things, and Vaishnava accept that also, just like Bij mantras. Kleem, Hreem, Bij mantras. They're sounds. They're not words in the same sense as other words, but they're sounds which are improperly vibrated, have a potency to manipulate matter in various ways, or to purify the soul, or to give entrance into esoteric realms. But most words, they convey a meaning. So if we say that Krishna is not knowable, then the Vedas, or the Vedas ultimately lead, all the knowledge of the Vedas, Veda means knowledge, ultimately leads to nothing to be known. Then it's contradictory. Then you have to become something like a Zen Buddhist, in which you're just sitting around waiting for some experience to happen to you. And it's not this, or it's some tantric, it's just some experience. What else have I got in my notes here? Just see if there's anything else. Yeah, he's understandable by knowledge, and he gives that knowledge. So inertly. Yeah. I'll just read out something which I wrote, which sums up much of what I said. That he is Jnana Gamya seems to contradict such statements as Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 14, Text 29. Yeah, that's that. Atapite Deva Patambhujatavayam. That's Brahma's prayers. Certainly, knowledge is received through the Jnanendriyas as well as abstract knowledge. That knowledge which is fashioned in the mind, such as that pertaining to logic, mathematics, philosophy, etc. But all that kind of knowledge is wholly incapable of approaching Krishna. Mundane knowledge cannot reveal Krishna. But if he were totally unknowable, then the words of the Vedas would be meaningless. Veda means knowledge and ultimately leads to the highest knowledge. But if Krishna is not that highest knowledge, then there would be a higher entity than him. But it is not so, because Vaidaisya Sarveraham Eva Vedyaha. All the Vedas are meant for knowing him. The idea that the ultimate is unknowable denies the personality and activities of the Supreme and seeks to cast it, the Supreme, as something ineffable. Ineffable means beyond our scope of knowing. Simply to be felt or experienced, but not described. This is the impersonal pseudo-reference for the Supreme, who in their concept is always unknown and vague, and thus inferior to the impersonalist, who himself has clearly visible and definable personalities and activities, and, if we accept his theory, possesses attributes that the Supreme lacks. In other words, that he is more than the Supreme. That Supreme is Jnanagamya. That the Supreme is Jnanagamya especially refers to the Paramatma feature who is described in this chapter, the specific knowledge for knowing him having just been stated. That's those five verses. How he is known has been described. That's in the verses just after those five verses. What is the specific knowledge about him? Okay, so I'll just read that now. What Gyayam yat tat pravakshami yat yajgya tamritam ashnute anadi mat param brahma nasat tannasaduchate. I shall now explain the knowable, knowing which you will taste the eternal. Brahman, the spirit, beginningless and subordinate to me, lies beyond the cause and effect of this material world. Sarvatah parnipadang tat sarvatokshi shiro mukham sarvatah shuti valloke sarvam avritya tishtati. Everywhere are his hands and legs, his eyes, heads and faces, and he has ears everywhere. In this way the Supersoul exists, pervading everything. Sarvendriya gunabhasam sarvendriya vivarjitam asaktang sava bhrichchaiva nirgunam guna bhuktricha. The Supersoul is the original source of all senses, yet he is without senses. He is unattached, although he is the maintainer of all living beings. He transcends the modes of nature, and at the same time he is the master of all the modes of material nature. Bahirantascha bhutanam acharam charam eva chat sukshmat va tadavigyayam. Now that's very interesting. Durastam chantike chatat. This is a description of the gyayam, that which is to be known. And one of the descriptions, one word comes here, avigyayam, which means unknowable. The Supreme Truth exists outside and inside of all living beings, the moving and the unmoving. Because he is subtle, he is beyond the power of the material senses to see or to know. Although far, far away, he is also near to all. Avibhaktam cha bhuteshu vibhaktam eva chastitam bhuta bhatri tatat gyayam. Again, gyayam. Grasishnu prabhavishnu cha. Although the Supersoul appears to be divided among all beings, he is never divided. He is situated as one. Although he is the maintainer of every living entity, it is to be understood that he devours and develops all. Then again, Jyotisham apitaj jyotis tamasaf paramuchyate jnanam geyam jnanagamyam hridi sarvasya vishtitam. He is the source of light in all luminous objects. He is beyond the darkness of matter and is unmanifested. He is knowledge, he is the object of knowledge, and he is the goal of knowledge. He is situated in everyone's heart. So there's a lot of stuff in there, just in those few verses. This Radhika Raman Prabhu, Ravi Gupta, he did his PhD in Oxford University, and he published a book. It was just on a few verses from Paramatma Sandarbha. Not verses, but a few lines. And he did his whole PhD on it. Just unpacked it. There's so much. When he told me, he first told me, I said, well, there must be many footnotes. He said, yeah, most of the book is footnotes. It's one word. And you see how it's understood in the particular context. Gyeyam, who is to be known? What is the difference here? Why the specific word gyeyam and not jnana? And then this chapter finishes here then. Iti kshetram, or just coming to the end. Iti kshetram, no, or this section, sorry. Iti kshetram tata jnanam gyeyam choktam samasataha. Madbhakta etad vigyaya madbhava yopapadyate. Thus the field, so Krishna says, jnanam and gyeyam, I have spoken this. Samasataha, in summary, thus the field of activities, the body, knowledge and the knowable have been summarily described by me. Only my devotees can understand this thoroughly and thus attain to my nature. So that's the point. You can't, it's not understandable unless one is blessed by being accepted as a devotee. Otherwise, it's so you can think about it and discuss it, but you can't begin to understand it. I was just listening to some lecture by some Kami professor on Bhagavad Gita. I don't know where he got this from. Maybe it's from this Tilak's Bhagavad Gita, in which he stresses karma. Maybe he got it from Dr. Radhakrishnan's commentary. I don't know. I didn't read those commentaries at all. But he stresses again, and because he's reading verses from the Bhagavad Gita and explaining it, and he stresses again and again, but it's not devotion to any god. Because all the verses say, Krishna says, you have to devote yourself to me. But you have to understand it like this, that when he says devotion to me, it doesn't really mean to a person, but it means to some. You see, there's the whole of the universe, and we're all part of it, and you have devotion to that. And he, again and again, he explains where he gets this from. It's not in Bhagavad Gita. He's saying in bhakti. See, the different parts, karma, jnana, and bhakti. And bhakti, but I have to stress again, it's not to any personal god. Krishna represents the whole universe, and it's the wonder of seeing ourselves as part of the universe. He's teaching this in the university. And did he ever come to India and see all the people in the temples and the bhakti, and they're worshipping God? He's not any deity. So envious, actually. It's not what's stated in the text. It's not the clear, straightforward meaning. But because he's a philosopher, and he can't accommodate that there can be any personal God. Bad luck for him, and for anyone else who believes such a fool and a rascal. But madbhakta etad vigyaya. This can be properly understood by my devotee, Krishna says, not by anyone else. So, Hare Krishna, any question or comment, please. Did I fully go through all the notes? Oh, yeah, there's always more to say. Yeah, so that knowledge is through, but that means pure knowledge also. If one's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in discussing with Ramananda Rai proposed Kama Mishra Bhakti. No, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said Jnana Mishra Bhakti. No. Pure knowledge, by pure knowledge. That means one's attitude in approaching Krishna has to be pure, not with any personal motive. Srila Baladev Vidyabhusha and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explain that the name Jnana Gamya implies that merely by performing the pious, fruitive activities enjoined in the Vedas for elevation to heavenly planets, one will never be able to understand the actual truth about Krishna. Yeah, so if we take the Vedas to be just some chant the Vedas and go to the heavenly planets, but one won't know Krishna. If we accept the Vedas as simply some means for enhancing our sense gratification. Stane stita, don't try to go to the heavenly planets. Just stay where you are and hear about Krishna. Yeah.
This was interesting that Bhakti is listed in 16th chapter, there's a mantra on the that like in those slokas, Bhakti is listed as an item of knowledge.
Bhakti is listed as an item of knowledge. Yeah, etat jnanam iti proktam jnanam yadato nyata. Yeah, knowledge, bhakti, what is that? Maichanena yogena bhakti yogena sevita. So, it's, in other words, one who has knowledge, they'll have bhakti. Yeah, but if you want to examine from the platform of knowledge, there's no question of being a person in knowledge if you don't have bhakti. And no question of being a person in knowledge unless you are amanitvam, adhambitvam, hingsa, kshandir, evach. You can't be said to be a person in knowledge if you're proud. You may see that also. Someone, he's lauded, oh, great sadhu. And then, but he behaves proud. And he says, he doesn't seem to be like a sadhu to me. He's very proud. But he's a sadhu and he's beating or kicking a dog in the Uttar Ramayana. The sadhu kicks the dog and the dog goes and prays. I don't think there's a sadhu. He's kicking a dog. What kind of sadhu is that? So, among the symptoms of a person in knowledge, because the knowledge is being discussed here, that he has maichanyena yogena, has unflinching bhakti to Krishna. But it's also true that without bhakti one cannot get knowledge. So I spoke about that. Which comes first, the chicken or the egg? The knowledge is a part of bhakti, or it's subsidiary of bhakti, but without bhakti one can't get knowledge. So where do you get out of that loop? It's called the mercy of the devotees. And when the devotees give you the mercy, then they give you the seed of devotional service, and then from that, by they give you, which is the knowledge that I am an eternal servant of Krishna, and from that everything develops. Sorry, what were you going to say?
That we say that the sadhana and sadhya are the same. So the bhakti is the process and the...
Yeah, bhakti is the process and the result also. Yeah, knowledge, jnanam, gyanam, jnanagamya, they're all, in one sense they're all the same, but in another sense there's the difference also.
Because if you discuss with madhvas, then again they put superiority of jnanam. Is it by bhakti? This is one of
they may come to what we call shantaras. They seem to prefer that even over Dasya. Now he put so much stress on knowing him. And ultimately, the highest level, one doesn't know him as the Supreme. Okay. Three times phones went off. It's repeatedly, I find it, at least here in India, that you tell people one time, two times, three times at the beginning of the lecture, still the phone will go off. What is this? Is this some arrogance or foolishness or what is it? Just lack of culture. In that way, it's better in the West. You don't have to tell people to turn off their phone. They're going to go off very rarely. Lack of consideration for others. Okay, Hare Krishna.